All right, we are live. Hey there, Laker fans. Welcome to Lakers Detailed. I am your host, Vinay, with my co-host, Raj. Lakers have just ripped off 5 wins in a row, including a back-to-back, a thriller last night against the Bucks, and then obviously relatively less, you know, much cooler, got a little annoying towards the end of the third quarter sort of game against the Grizzlies. But for the most part, pretty smooth sailing. All the role players step up. Rui has a spectacular game today against the Grizzlies. Just keeps firing on all cylinders. I think he set himself a career high in scoring today, which was awesome to see for him. So good for him too as well. And, you know, the Lakers win a game without Anthony Davis, which, you know, we know that this team can be very, very bad when Anthony Davis doesn't play. And the Lakers managed to win that game. We get a back-to-back. We continue kind of rolling in the direction, in a good direction, with about 9 to 10 games left. And, you know, if we can get lucky, you know, we do have that tiebreaker over the Suns. We might have a chance of maybe jumping them and getting into that 8th spot or the 7th spot, depending on what happens with the Kings. Raj, before we get into the Bucks game, which I think was much more dramatic, let's talk about the Grizzlies game. What did you take away from this game, if anything? What did you take away from that Grizzlies game?
Yeah, I mean, not too much. I think any game. It's funny, even I was looking at it. Only 4 missed games from AD this season, which is kind of ridiculous. I didn't realize it was that low, even when I went and looked back. And so I went and checked our losses. First game was against Houston. We got drubbed by 34 in that one. Then it was that second game against San Antonio. You lose by 16. Mm-hmm. I believe that was the Wemby-less Spurs, if I remember that correctly. I don't even think Wemby played that game. But in any case, and then it was Atlanta. We lost by 16. DeJounte Murray kind of closed us out. And then the only other game was the win in Boston. So these games without AD have been pretty destructive in terms of how other teams score. But tonight it felt like very much a serious business game up until the end. I don't know what the end of the third quarter was. Jake LaRavia went off and hit 5 or 6 threes. Jake LaRavia, by the way, a 25% three-point shooter. He just went 0-for-7 in his last game, but was feeling frisky and just knocked down threes. And the Lakers gave him some confidence, so he was able to go off. I think he had like 26 points, a career high for I think that was a season high for Jake LaRavia. But just a very down-to-business ball game. I thought LeBron was really good. Rui just doesn't miss in Memphis for some reason. And then Vinay went and dissed Memphis after the game. Very, very Joakim Noah in Cleveland-ish. Like, where it was what do you enjoy about Cleveland? Rui's kind of like, Memphis is not my favorite city. So it's a really weird beef. Just a Rui and a Memphis beef. Yeah, it's funny. But no, very serious business. I thought this was a nice kind of win for the team. AD was able to rest because he played a bajillion minutes against Milwaukee to Brooklyn too. But no, just a solid one. What did you take from it?
Yeah, you know, I really, my takeaway was the role players. Like, I thought Austin came out aggressive, D'Lo came out aggressive, Rui obviously came out aggressive. We got nice minutes early on from Jackson Hayes, just attacking the rim and whatnot. So it's just like, I thought my concern was we would come out a little flat because of the double overtime, obviously physically, but then also at the same time, you know, Bron's back. So maybe the guys are deferring to Bron a little bit and, you know, we kind of lose that mojo that we had to finish that Milwaukee game. But they kind of came out and just kind of did, you know, they kept playing the way that they normally do. And I mean, granted, it is the Grizzlies. So it's not like they're playing some super tough team. And they're kind of down to, they had Bain and they had, Triple J, but you know, it's not the same team. So I thought, so Raj, I was going to say this. So usually when Bron takes a game off, at least this season, when he comes back the very next game, there's usually like a heavy dose of Bron in the first quarter. Cause he's like, he's like getting himself back in the rhythm of the game. I've seen him do that before this season, but this game, he kind of like just let these guys rock out a little bit. He had a couple early turnovers and then he was like, all right, I'm not passing the ball anymore. I'm just going to keep driving to the rim. I think he had like 3 straight layups or something like that. So I thought everybody played their roles well enough. And Bron kind of picked his spots like he normally does. And I thought it was a really nice win. Some strange lineups again, you know, that we should probably discuss. Like, I, you know, we should talk about this. Like, I don't understand the pecking order to the starting lineup. Not starting, but to the roster. Like, I don't know what Max Christie has to do to get more minutes, because he gives you productive minutes, but it seems
switch
like
agencies. No
matter, yeah, yeah, like, at this point, I have no clue what he had. Like, I thought this would have been a game where, you know, Max probably play a lot more minutes. He doesn't get a lot of minutes. They wanted to play Colin Castleton the day that he like fractured his wrist or something like that. Castleton suited up and able to play. They don't play Castleton. They play Harry Giles. And like, I understand maybe there's some agency favors that are happening in this process. That's why certain guys are getting minutes over other guys. But it's just like, okay. Like, I think in the first half, we ran that lineup of like D'Lo, Spencer, Torian, Harry Giles. Cam and Jackson Hayes. And that was not a good lineup. Like, that lineup was bad. And then we ran it again, and that same exact lineup is the one that, you know, allowed that Grizzlies team to go on a run. So my thing is, like I get it. It's the Grizzlies. It's a back-to-back. You want these guys to be – but is there any reason – like, what do you make of that? Like, because I can't seem to figure out what these guys have to do to get minutes.
So what I think it is, Darvin likes to put Cam on the other team's best offensive option. So, like, tonight – Cam's assignment was Desmond Bane, right? Like, whenever Desmond Bane, at least when Cam came off the bench, it was, you guard Desmond Bane. And look, Desmond Bane started to cook anyway, coming off pick and rolls, pulling up from three. Desmond Bane is just, you could tell this Memphis team knows that these aren't serious games. So Desmond Bane's like, look, we're down 28. I'm going to start chucking and let's just see what happens. And Bane started just knocking down threes. I think that's what it is. I don't think there's anything Max Christie can productively do on the floor that's going to change the rotation, right? And it's kind of scaring me, but Spectrum keeps bringing up the ghost of Gabe Vincent's name, just continues to come up in every Spectrum hit in terms of he's on the trip, he might play, and I honestly don't see a fit for him. I don't see where the role is coming from. I think that's a talent upgrade somewhere. I'm not sure where the fit is, especially with Spencer playing as well as he has, and I don't really want to go down in size anymore. But no, I don't know where the rotation kind of comes from with those two, at least. I kind of like the rest of the rotation, though. I think it's made some sense. I think Jackson Hayes has kind of earned his keep in terms of how he's playing, and he's just giving us an athletic floor that really raises what we need. But no, I don't think there's anything Max can do. He's hitting his threes. He's cutting to the rim. He's rebounding. I just think they like both of them in the rotation. We'll see if Vando eventually comes back, and I think Vando would just eat. Would just cannibalize both of their minutes, right? I'm guessing Bando would just take Max and Cam's minutes, and then just that would be done with. But I'm not sure. Colin Castleton, was nice to see him out there. Broken hand season.
Yeah.
Been driving down an hour and a half to LA for him and DHS to keep sitting out games. And they just, it's funny because people don't know this, but like the South Bay doesn't have like an injury report thing. So I've learned now to text like the PR guy for the injuries. And one time I drove all the way out. I was like, hey, like, why is JHS not playing? Oh, like he got sick. I was like, oh, okay. I just drove through 2-hour traffic. But thank you for that.
Oh, my God.
Where's Skylar Mays? Oh, my God. But no, it's nice to see Castleton healthy. I don't think he's ready for the backup center spot. Harry Giles taking threes. That was weird. I didn't understand that either. But I don't know where the rotation's going with that. But I've liked the team. That they're playing well. I don't give style points, Vinay, for teams without AD. Just go win, and they did that for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah, we're at this point with not that many games left in the season where we just have to essentially just try to win as many games as we can in whatever fashion we can. And on top of that, try to make it out of those games healthy too as well. So, you know, AD bumped knees, I think. Braun hit the deck a couple times today, but, you know, he came up. It didn't look like it was too serious. But just, you know, just stuff like that. We don't want them to get hurt. And I think both of them are very mindful of not putting themselves in position to get hurt, too, at the same time. But, yeah, the rotation thing definitely cracks me up. The reason why I'm laughing so much is just because I know you make that trek. I know how long that trek is for you, too. And the Lakers are not kind with their injury reports, or kind with, you know, letting guys know.
I was thinking about this today, Vinny. What happened to Christian Wood? Like, that was a 2-week injury that has become 2 months now. Yeah. I mean, like, it was sold as he hurt himself over the All-Star break, by the way, which is very strange. And then he's also gone. So, the injury stuff is very strange. They're very quiet, and then the guys will just end up playing. I remember Gabe Vincent just happened to play the next game, and everyone was looking around like, Gabe Vincent hasn't even warmed up yet. Has Gabe Vincent practiced? And he went into a game. I think he played 2 games, Renee. I think he was in.
Yeah.
I forgot where he played, but I remember he played like 2 games and then was immediately went and had surgery. Like, oh, should have did this.
That was like the Cam Reddish thing. Remember, like, he sprained his ankle. Mm. He was out for 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden he's playing. Oh, right, and then he's out the very next game. And I was just like, what are we doing? Like, why are we just – this doesn't make any sense. But, I don't know. Some of that roster stuff. I mean, obviously, like I said, it was a Grizzlies. It was kind of a whatever kind of lineup that he threw out there. But I was just like, this seems like the perfect opportunity to play some of those young guys that we drafted, or, you know, maybe an opportunity to see what they kind of look like, even in spot minutes. Like, well, what's the harm of doing that? But anyways, I don't try too hard to figure out what Darvin Ham is trying to figure out. I just try to figure. I figure the simplest answer is usually the most accurate one, and for the most part it's been the case. But let's talk about the Bucks game. I know you did the post game yesterday with Anthony, but you know, we're now 24 hours removed kind of from that game too as well. That I just off the top of my head, this is yet another game where I think a lot of the I don't want to say a lot of the fan base, but sections of the fan base were just checked out. They were just like, oh, you know what, Lakers have no chance, no Bron. No chance. And if there's one thing that we know about this team is that even when Bron is out, like, a lot of guys step up in different ways. And, you know, D'Lo obviously had that spectacular game at home against the Bucks. And then last night, Austin Reeves goes absolutely nuts in the fourth quarter. And then even further into the extra period, Anthony Davis is absolutely phenomenal. Shutting down Damian Lillard on his drives and his open jump shots, just blocking shots, just being awesome, you know, being the guy that we did. And obviously, that took a toll on his body. That's why he didn't play today. But this team really stepped up. And it was also multiple times in the games where they were down double digits. And the team just kept fighting. And there's a grittiness to this team when they're in, like, when they want to be. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's like they see AD playing defense. And so then they're like, oh, no, we've got to lock in too. Or they see Rui playing defense or what it is, whatever it is. But there's a grittiness to this team. It's not always there. Like, today's a great example. They're not trying to win this game gritty. You know, they're not trying to get out the win. They just want to outscore the other team. They don't really care on the other side. But there's a grittiness to this team that continues to show up every single time. Our expectations are very low of whether they're going to win the game or they're going to compete in the game. And I thought yesterday was another great example of that. And I don't think, for the folks that have been following my timeline, this is going to eventually lead into what the later topics are going to be. I don't think people give enough credit to the guys that we have on the team. We're always, as a fan base, we're always blaming the role players for all of our issues, or we're blaming the coach for all of our issues. But we're never, you know, like, it'll always just be like one guy, like maybe D'Lo one night, maybe Austin one night. But these guys are all contributing to some degree to help win games when one of our stars is unavailable or when one of our stars is ineffective, you know, for that night on the defensive end or offensive end. And I don't think we as a fan base give enough credit to that. Talk to me about that idea. Does that connect? Does the stepping up of performance from our role players in a game against the Bucks, does that match up? Are you seeing the same thing when those sort of situations
happen? Yeah. Man, this team is 9 games above 500. I mean, like, that's a pretty solid season, honestly. I mean, I think if the West was a different race, almost every team in the West, and I think the play-in has a lot to do with this in terms of the teams that are going for it. But, I mean, the team is starting to win. I think there's a resiliency, like the grittiness you're talking about. That Bucks game started, I mean, it looked – I feel like AD is the loudest with this. Like, he just – he kind of wears his energy on his shoulders, if that makes sense. Like, you watch AD and you can 100% tell when he's engaged and when he's not. First two possessions I remember of that game, Giannis straight line drive right through AD's chest, gets a layup, right? Giannis again, straight line drive right on AD. I was like, oh, AD's not, he's not ready for this game. I don't mean ready like mentally. He's just not ready. Like, he doesn't want to put up the physical fight that it would take to beat this Bucks team. At least I thought that's how that game started. He ends up being able to, like, 30 points, 23 rebounds, right? Just absolutely destroys. And if you look at our role players, I mean, Austin had a slow start, but he's really picked up. I think his passing has gotten so much better. People love to, like, clip the two turnovers that Austin has a game and go, what are we doing? Like, why are we giving Austin Reeves the ball? Are we watching, like, in terms of what we need in terms of our ball handling? Austin has, I thought, really upped his playmaking. But then he's shooting 46% on pull-up threes since the All-Star break. It's like 18 game sample now. He's absolutely on fire, and he's drilling shots. I think D'Lo, if you take out the December, he's shooting like 43% from three. He's had a really good season. He's already talking about his contract, which I would just like. Can we wait till the playoffs after that? But, you know, D'Lo's already talking about he wants to re-sign, which is, I guess, is better than the other way that the vibes can go. And I think Rui just being inserted as a starter. Renee, we're 20-10 when Rui starts, and that's separate from whether both AD or LeBron play. Just whenever Rui Hachimura starts, we're 20-10 this season, which I think is around a 51 win pace. Which, you know, if we started that a little earlier, maybe this team's on a different trajectory. But no, I think the role players have really stepped up. That win in ball, I think our best wins. I don't think it's a coincidence. It's like when Austin and Rui are going off, right? Those are kind of our best wins of the season. The Clippers win, the Bucks win on this one, and then the Boston win, right? Those are all games without one of our stars in there, and where like the role players are able to step up. But no, I think like what it is, Renee, I think role players, it's much easier to see what they aren't.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why, like, I say, like, shiny new object syndrome. Like, it's very easy to canvas the league and look at players who you don't watch on a nightly basis and kind of only see the shine that comes from them, right? But then if you go talk to a person who covers that team, like, oh dude, you don't want that guy, like, like, you know, there's a lot of situations like that. And I think that's because role players, it's very easy to do that, or even, you know, players just under the tier of a star player. But I think our role players have really stepped up, man. And I like I keep saying this, you bring Bando back, I like our eight man going into the playoffs. I really do. I like our eight-man rotation versus pretty much anybody except Denver. But no, these role players have stepped up, man. They should deserve credit. That's why, like, I don't know, someone said I was an Austin stan. I was like, I just think it's important to, like, put up stuff that these other guys are doing sometimes. Like, I think it's important to acknowledge that. Like,
that's such a mild comment. That's such a mild insult to get. You should see what I get, bro. Oh my god!
No, I see what you get, Austin, for sure.
No, but go, like, go ahead. I interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, you're good. But like, they're like, all you do is you post Austin stuff. Like, do you understand how well he's playing? I don't think people realize this is an undrafted
player that's in it. Yeah,
it was in his third year that we're giving the ball to in late games and clutch situations and say, go win us games. Like, I think it's cool to, like, document how that's going in a season. Like, he's playing super well, and I think that's okay to put out sometimes. But no, like, I think these role players are starting to really play well, and you don't go above nine. Like, and I love that D'Lo finally, like, gave Darvin Ham a compliment as well. And, like, I think that was the first Darvin Ham positive note that's come out of a post. I don't know if you saw it, but in the post game of Milwaukee, he said Darvin was great to close that game. He called incredible sets, which just, like, goes against everything that anyone wants to believe. But
every day I've always seen a tweet come from, you know, from that section of the fan base. How come no players say anything good about Darvin? Nobody says anything good about Darvin. Like, every single day people say the same thing. And it's like, okay, well, Bron said something nice about Darvin now, and D'Lo has said something nice about Darvin. Now, granted, they've also been critical of him sometimes, which is, I think, what a normal relationship between players and the coach is going to be. But what was also nice, Raj, watching Doc Rivers blow yet another big-time lead to a team coached by Darvin Ham. You know, he was a very popular name that everybody thought that was like a lock to, automatic upgrade compared to Darvin Ham. And then what ends up happening is he loses to Darvin Ham without LeBron. And I'm not shocked about that. I would not put any money on a Doc Rivers-led team just because it just happened too many times now at this point. you know,
I also believe in karma. Like Doc Rivers on the sideline there is just nasty. Like,
yeah,
I went to Lakers Bucks and I forgot that Doc Rivers like was the coach, and I look over and you see Doc Rivers on the opposite side. I'm like, that is nasty business. Like, yeah. So I'm sure Adrian Griffin is somewhere out there just preying on the downfall of a Doc Rivers team. But honestly, I don't think he has to pray too hard. I think he's gonna get his wishes. But no, Milwaukee's interesting because they're also winning. Like, it's a very strange team that wins at a pace that is enough to kind of get you in. But we'll see what Doc Rivers does when it's on the line.
So let me ask you a question. There was a point in the fourth quarter where I think Austin had hit two or three buckets in a row, I want to say. I think he hit a three, and I think he may have had like a mid-range floater or a jumper. I can't remember. Back of my mind, I can't remember exactly what it was. But I know he had two buckets in a row. And I think the Lakers called a timeout, or there was a timeout that was called, and there was a stoppage in play. And on the very next possession, and I'm not saying this when I bring up this example for the folks who are listening, I'm not bringing this up because I'm trying to cause friction between the two players. It's an observation that bothered me because it's something that happened. And it's also something that like Bron has kind of mentioned on that podcast with JJ Redick, right? Like to preface it, Bron on that podcast on the first episode said, I don't understand why coaches just don't keep running the same thing over and over again when it's working.
Spamming.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was talking about that two man game with him and Austin that led to the Clippers comeback the comeback against the Clippers when Bron went crazy from three in the fourth quarter. Right. They kept spamming the action that Ham was calling until, you know, the Clippers finally adjusted to what it was. So last night they get the ball to Austin and they're basically allowing him to hunt Chris Middleton, who could not stay in front of him. Like Middleton was not moving very well defensively, and Austin was getting really good looks off of it, and Austin was being aggressive. So kudos to him for being aggressive in that moment. Austin hits two buckets. You could tell he's in a groove. There's a timeout in the stoppage, and out of the timeout and the stoppage, it turns into like this D'Angelo Russell ISO ball, which I think ends up going to the left wing, and I think D'Lo attempts a contested three. Now I don't know I couldn't tell what the play was supposed to be. But after that play, like I think it was one of the few tweets that I put like after the game because I was just too locked into the game to tweet. I said, why are we giving it to D'Lo? Like, why are we not just giving it to Austin? He is the hot hand. He's scoring. Why do that? Again, I'm not bringing this up to cause friction between two players, but that bothered me because I was just like, even D'Lo himself should be like, no, Austin, you're the hot hand. Like just take it. Like, I'll screen for you or whatever. And we saw that happen in overtime, right? They ran that ghost screen, the same ghost screen action that Bron runs with AD. They ran a guard version of that. And Austin drilled a three from the left wing. But it's just sometimes when that kind of stuff happens, it bothers me because it's just like, why is the train of thought? Like, why is it right then and there? Like, what in that moment caused you to do that? Because I didn't see the defense doing anything to take Austin away. Do you remember that moment? Do you remember that play? Like,
But I do remember when Austin was continually getting good looks. I don't remember what portion of the game that is, if that was the same portion. But I'm not sure if it was every time Chris Middleton, but I knew they were trying to involve Malik Beasley in every action. Yeah. So they were trying to pick on Beasley and Dame for the most part, but it was mostly Beasley. And I think Beasley had switched on to maybe D'Lo. And I think he was the one bringing up the screen. Sometimes they go away from stuff that works continuously. It's very strange. I think that's what kind of LeBron was alluding to in the podcast. But yeah, I remember Austin was continuing because Austin got us back. I think we were down like 10 points and it just kind of became Austin getting to the basket. He had a nice attack of a closeout, was getting to the rim on, you know, crossovers and getting to the line and all that. But I don't remember the exact play, but sometimes we have it feels like we like portion out the game in terms of quarters of who gets to run what during which quarter instead of pushing it out to what's your advantage in each quarter. Like I think that would be the more kind of a sustainable way to go about it. But obviously they have a way that they like to play where D'Lo's on the ball, Austin's on the ball, and LeBron's on the ball, and then kind of Dinwiddie works his way in as well. We'll see when guys get back. But no, I don't remember that exact moment. At least I thought that Dinwiddie three was just insane that he took off.
Yeah, that was a little nuts because he could have drove. Like that, there was. I think the only guy who was back might have been Middleton or somebody. They didn't have a rim defender.
It was
back.
Middleton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was just like, oh, you could just drive this to the rim and probably get a really good shot at the rim. And he pulled it. I mean, he made it, so we're happy. But I was just like, wow, like that could have been like a momentum flipping the other way sort of thing. Another play was Dame getting that three, baiting that foul three in Austin as he was coming off the thing. Austin getting him back with the same, same move. Yeah, on that baseline thing. Like, I thought that was great. I thought, like, when we talk about maturation, and I think, you know, it's funny that people get upset at you for highlighting Austin. You're watching a third-year guard use a veteran move against another superstar veteran. Mm-hmm. And I think because we watch, I think people are used to watching greatness. Like, if you're a Bron fan, what Austin's doing is probably like, ah, whatever. It's like Austin, like, LeBron's my favorite player. That's what I think. But it's just like, for looking at it on a macro level, this is a role player who's in his third year who is doing like real clutch time stuff against other guys. And, you know, sometimes it's on the defensive end. I thought he had a really good defensive play against Dame, I want to say, where he blocked his shot or contested him into a really bad make. And then you get plays like him drawing the foul on Dame because Dame's over pursuing him as he comes off the pin down or off the curl cut. And so, like, stuff like that is just, it seems so small because to other people. But when you, like I said, when you zoom out and you think about the fact, like, hey, Rui's probably gone like 6 minutes without touching the ball or shooting the ball. And all of a sudden we're giving it to him for an open three, and he's draining it every time. He's shooting with confidence. He's attacking the baseline, pump fakes out of it, you know, drives directly baseline to go and dunk it on somebody. Like, I don't think people understand that, like, these guys, there's a lot of guys that can score. D'Lo can score. Rui can score. Austin can score. AD can score. Torian Prince is going to try and score no matter what when he gets the ball. Like, there's guys that want to shoot the ball, so it's not necessarily easy for them to build rhythm. And these guys are doing more with less. And that's why I think we kind of overemphasize the importance of some of these role players, because we know our stars are going to be stars for the most part. But, you know, I thought, again, just like that Boston game, because he hit those deep threes against Boston, and Rui played great in that game too. Another game where both of the guys that we need to have step up in Bron's void did that for us. And I think that's just awesome, dude.
So this is my favorite win. The Bucks game is my favorite win of the season, Vinay. Like, to me, that's my favorite win so far. And the Boston win was fun, obviously, because F the Celtics, you know, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. But that felt more like a hot shooting night that went well. You know what I mean? That, like, in my, not to like take any credit away from that game, but that was a big game of changing our season in terms of the energy that it flipped. But, like, that felt like we were just hot. This one felt like a game we took, right? Milwaukee up 19 in the fourth quarter. Very easy to lay down. I mean, that's a very easy game where I'm watching Clipper games, Benet, and, like, the amount of times that team just decides we're going to lay on the floor and let the other team roll us over in fourth quarters, it happens so often. They don't even need a punch. A team can pretend to punch, and they will just fall back down and you know, let the game go away from them. I like this team has some resiliency to it. And, yeah, I mean – Austin put up, so he played 48 minutes that game, right? 29, 14 rebounds, 10 assists. While chasing Damian Lillard around all night. And while Dame hides and won't guard him on the other end. But that's another point. That's another part of this. But yeah, the amount of guards that can do that, I'm sorry, that's not a long list, just to, you know, give people an answer there. I thought, you know, he was awesome. Rui being benched in the fourth, still stuff that I don't understand, and like very weird. Got benched for Torian Prince. I understand, like, our run was kind of coming during that time, but Rui, again, credit to coming in the overtime. D'Lo's third quarters, very feast or famine kind of offense, but when it's going, it's going. Hit three threes in the third quarter, brought us, I think he brought the lead from like 13-7 or something, and kind of got the game into a flow. But yeah, role players stepped up and took that game. I thought Giannis and AD, I thought that was an awesome matchup just to watch one-on-one. But he got the help. AD hitting threes, hit like two threes in the clutch there.
Yeah.
Took 31 shots, Vinay, 13 for 31. I love that. Take every single jumper you can. But no, everyone kind of stepped up. And that's my favorite win of the year. I don't know if you agree with that, but that's like
– I'm with you, dude. For me, it's a tie between the Celtics game and probably the Bucks game, because I think expectations were very, very low for both teams for both of those games. Bucks, I felt like the game could be a little bit closer, just because, you know, like I think without Bron, the Lakers can survive not saying like we can win a playoff series, but we could survive it a little bit more because we do have playmaking in Austin and D'Lo. We do have shooting, scoring, you know what I mean? Like, but Bron, the place that we really get hurt is we don't have size. Like, so we don't have the size to match up against a Bucks team without Bron, especially with no Vando available in that game too as well. So it's like, it's asking a lot of Rui. Rui's not the defensive player or not even close to the defensive IQ that Bron is. So that's where I thought we would get hurt a lot. And I'll tell you what, that Bucks game, the reason I had some hope in that Bucks game is we shot horrendously to start that game, and they still only scored like 37 or 36 points in the first quarter. And I was like, okay, so the defense is there. We just got to make shots. And once we started making shots, they went a little bit cold. Giannis stopped getting his freaking fullback dive plays where he's just running into the, you know, goal line dives or whatever that he likes to do when he's just shouldering dudes out of the way and refs just don't call it. Once those stopped going his way and he stopped drawing fouls on that, I thought it worked in Lakers' favor. But I mean, just overall, like, what do you think about AD's defensive tenacity in that game? Because that, you know, like, we've seen times where Giannis will come in, and I think he tweeted it, like, Giannis gets up for this AD matchup
every time
they play. And, you know, they started that game off, I think Giannis's first layup or second, or it might have been a dunk or a layup, he went right into AD. Like, he was trying to bulldoze AD to get that dunk on. And so you could tell he was trying to send, you know, like a physicality message to AD. But AD kind of stood his ground. And he actually, I would say, won a lot of those plays in the late game. What do you think about that? What do you think about his tenacity in a game like this?
I thought AD was super physical, and I thought he had to be. Giannis is going to kind of push the button, push the envelope on that every single time. And when Giannis comes like full speed in transition, I think that's the places you kind of see where there was a lot of times where Rui was about to take the charge, but then he got out of the way. It was like, I changed my mind. And Giannis got a few dunks. Giannis started that game 8-for-10 from the field. I believe he would shoot 6-for-15 for the rest of the night. So 8-for-10, he finished, I think, like 10 or 15-for-25 or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think he shot for like 6-for-15 at the end. And a lot of that was just AD standing his ground. Rui, I thought, was really good as well. And Giannis is a guy where you have to kind of meet force with force, right? Like, you can't be soft against Giannis. He's going to bully those type of players. Very Sabonis, not comparing those two, but Sabonis is another guy like that where if you go soft against Sabonis, he's going to kind of overpower you. Giannis, in the same way, is going to try to dunk on you. And I love that, like, AD was able to force him into, like, turn around. The Bucks also play really strange. They don't play a Dame and Giannis two-man game as much as you would think. They play a lot of isolations. Giannis does a lot of isos from the top of the key, and that's really where AD kind of lock into you. And the Lakers stayed home on a lot of their shooters. Bobby Portis was turning into Dirk Nowitzki for some reason. But other than that, like, I thought our defense was actually pretty solid and staying home on guys. Dame got some tough threes off offensive rebounds. But for the most part, I just love that we were able to kind of keep Giannis in front of us. Yeah. Only 6 free throws for Giannis, Vinay. And I feel like Giannis lives at the line against us.
Yeah.
By the way, my favorite part about basketball is that, like, how Giannis has played in NBA Finals. He's an NBA Finals MVP. He's played in hundreds of playoff games. Those last two free throws, Vinay, Giannis wanted no part of those.
Yeah.
He wanted no part of those. Those felt like that felt like a medicine ball to him. And then to see AD be able to – AD's had some demons that he has to slay in that department of the late-game free throws, and for him to be able to knock those down and ice the game, put us up 4, that kind of closed them out. I thought that was just real poetic. To have AD ice it and Giannis go over 2. I just thought that was just a chef's kiss kind of end of that game. But no, you have to be super physical with a guy like Giannis. And AD took the matchup. He took jump shots. We've been begging for this all season. AD, when you're open on the pocket, take the damn jumper every time. Because what it does is he starts getting those floaters. He starts going to the line. He starts being comfortable with the ball. He starts, like, be able to go into his handle and stuff like that that you don't get if AD's passive. I think part of that too, because he, like, hurt his leg, and so he couldn't attack the rim, so he had to shoot in a strange way. No, that matchup was just ginormous. What did you see from that matchup, that AD Giannis kind of one-on-one, mano-a-mano matchup at the end there?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for me, it's just him. He's got to match it. You know what I mean? Like, your teammates are watching you too, right? Like, I think one of the things that, like, we always try to talk about like the humanness of basketball, and part of that humanness is your teammates watching you get overwhelmed with your matchup. Like, and they like we could see it on TV. And if anybody's never seen a live NBA basketball game, let alone one that features like LeBron James and Anthony Davis, you should go see the physicality that these guys have to deal with in the paint sometimes. And it's not just him, it's guys like Giannis and Embiid and Jokic and all these guys. Basketball, as you know, skilled and pretty and you know, agility based as it seems on television, it is not that. Like, there's some real trench work that has to be done in the paint for, and you know, that's why bigs will never completely go out of style, because you need a guy who's going to rumble in the paint. And I thought that even if he wasn't having a great offensive game, like I said, you know, we could kind of survive bad offensive games from AD. The team has enough shooting. They're like the hottest offensive team, one of the hottest offensive teams post All-Star break anyways.
Yeah.
We could survive that. But we can't survive him getting overwhelmed by the other star player. And I thought that him standing his ground as best as he could to at least try and stalemate some of those possessions against Giannis, that makes a huge, huge difference. Like, even when we ran the switch or he's switching off and taking Damian Lillard, not letting Dame just dictate that he's going to take a step back three and you're going to be so far down in drop coverage that he can just take this and no, you're not going to contest it. It's like, no, like, that was a perfect, like, I thought that Bucks game was a great example of the Lakers still playing the same coverage that they always do, which is a drop, which is what they played. But Anthony Davis deciding to himself how deep that drop was really going to go based on the person that had the ball. And it's just like, okay, if it's I'm trying to think, like Pat Connaughton, or the other white dude, I couldn't even remember, something green, I can't remember what his first name is, but one of the other guys, then okay, I could be in maybe a slightly deeper drop. But if it's Dame, I'm not doing that. I want Dame to come down to my level a little bit more. Yeah. And in the fourth quarter, there's a dance, you know, like it's one of those things that there's no metric to explain what that is, but there is a part of basketball where if the big plays close enough where the shooter thinks he might get blocked or even tipped if he tries to fire the shot off, it changes what their decision making is. And I thought AD did such a good job when he got matched up to Giannis, when he got matched up to Dame, just eliminating that guarantee for those players that, oh, I know I'm going to score even though AD is in front of me. And I think the rest of the players feed off that. They're like, okay, AD's locked in on his side. Let me take care of my job. Ruiz, like, let me go crash the glass on the weak side, or D'Lo or Austin. Let me go crash. Oh, he got a block. Let me go full speed in transition and try to score because Giannis is all the way behind the rim, or Brook Lopez is all the way behind the rim, so we could do it. So it's just that's what tone setting is, dude. Like, when he's not having, you know, if he bumped his knee or he turned his ankle or whatever it is, or if his shot is just not following, these guys need to see you be you, even if it's not going well. Because if you don't, they don't know how to play off of you any other way, or it's harder for them to play off of you any other way. So I thought that was great, dude. I thought really that was really good.
Yeah, and I don't know how many guys in the league can even, like, Dame's lost a step for sure. I don't know how much of a step, but he's definitely not the Damian Lillard of, you know, of Portland days. But still, being able to switch on a Dame and then also be able to guard Giannis, AD's kind of ask on that. You just mentioned the drop coverage, basically, like that Dame Giannis kind of pick and roll. His ask is basically to hedge enough for the guard fighting over to catch up to Dame, and then also kind of deter Giannis, you know, running down the lane. And you talked about the Giannis football plays. Just the amount of times, Vinay, on the handoff where Giannis would hand it off and Dame shoots, Giannis just bulldozing in, elbows out. Stuff that you get killed for if you ever try it in a 24-hour fitness pickup run. But Giannis coming in full elbows out, extremely, you know, dangerous. And Giannis is a great player, and got to see him live. A player that I don't know if you've seen him live yet, Giannis, but Giannis is a player that is definitely a guy everyone should go check out. Very unicorn of his own in his own ways. I thought the defense was awesome. Not to tag him into this, but I love the insertion of Rui as a physical player. I think that changed our season, to be honest. I'm not in the Darvin Ham was 88 camp of not starting Rui or whatever. I think it's a very easy kind of low hanging fruit to grab. But like, look, we're 20-10 with Rui as a starter, and I think the guy that started the season as Rui probably didn't deserve to start, just was not playing well, didn't understand his offensive role, was not physical defensively, was not rebounding, and he's starting to board, he's starting to be a weak side block guy, and maybe those things are intertwined. We always talk about the human element of basketball. I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg. Was it Rui getting offensive touches so he became a defensive player? Was it the other way around? But I love the physicality and all those spin moves, Vinay, that used to be mid-range fades, they are now spin move, get the hell out of my way, I'm dunking this basketball.
I'm dunking,
Or spin move, I'm going through your body, and like you can't handle it because I'm 260 or whatever he is. I'm going through a chest. I absolutely love that edge of physicality, because when you stack that upon LeBron and AD, when both of those guys are engaged, and when those guys are engaged, they're super skilled for sure, but they're physical monsters at their core, right? LeBron's a super skilled physical monster. AD's a skilled physical monster. But those guys, how they dominate is being big physical monster dudes. If Rui can be a supplement to that, I think that changes a lot of what we can do. And then that also allows you, Vinay, to start two small guards. You to start D'Lo and Austin and be able to have them, be taken care of defensively, at least for one of the guys. But no, I think Rui just being uber physical. And that he had a play, I don't know if you remember this, but they threw a lob to Giannis. I don't remember if this was fourth quarter or overtime. They threw a lob, and Rui jumped with him. Jumping with Giannis is already tough, but Rui jumps with him. They both grab the ball at the same time. Rui comes down with it, and he draws like an over-the-back foul on Giannis by like overpowering him with the ball. And I thought that was just an awesome kind of depiction of that's what we need. Because there's times we saw like Rui, that guy's – weighs 100 pounds less than you. Why is he boxing you out? Or like, how are you, not being able to, like, I just love the physicality that Rui has kind of shown. And I thought that Bucks game really, really demonstrated that. Did you see that as well? Are you seeing that trend with Rui as well?
Yeah,
the physical nature of him.
There was a play, I think they gave it to Giannis in the post. I want to say on the left block. I don't remember what it was, but Rui was posting up Rui, and Rui was standing him up to the point where Giannis spun baseline, but had to wrap him. He like hooked him. And the refs called an offensive foul on Giannis for that play. I'm pretty sure that was Rui that he did it to. But that was like a perfect example. Like, don't just let the guy just bully you. Like, you're a heavy dude yourself. Like, I understand there's a strength difference and all that sort of stuff, but at least put up some resistance so he doesn't get comfortably to whatever spot he wants to get to. I'm with you. There's something that's clicked. I think you put it nicely. We don't know if it's the offensive engagement that's leading to the defensive engagement, but they're like, there's a play in the Grizzlies game today. I'll make sure that I clip it and share it on the timeline because I thought it was a really – Rui was having a great offensive game. But there was a play I think Jackson Hayes and Bron may have been on the floor too as well. But the ball gets swung to Santi Aldama in the corner. That's I think that was Bron's assignment because he was on that side. I don't know if the Lakers are playing the zone. And so Bron doesn't run it out. He just basically lets Aldama take the three, which is fine. I don't think Aldama shot too well from three. He was kind of spotty. So Aldama misses the three, and Jake LaRavia is right next to Bron. Like, I think he kind of comes he's there with Bron as that shot goes up. LaRavia gets the rebound. Like, nobody tries to get the rebound. They just watch him get the offensive rebound. And Rui actually crashes. And LaRavia may have been Rui's assignment. I can't remember, so I'll have to check when I rewatch it. Rui comes crashing from the wing and blocks LaRavia from behind. I think they get a transition opportunity going the other way. Austin gets a transition opportunity and draws a foul or something like that in transition for free throws. But like, that effort wasn't there before. Like, and I think that effort is starting to show up now because maybe there's a part of this also where it's just like, okay, I know I'm going to get these minutes. I know I may not necessarily get to shoot it as much as I'd like to shoot it, but I'm going to get these minutes. So I have to make myself useful. It might be a coaching thing. Maybe the assistant coaches or Ham is telling Rui, is like, look, I'm giving you these minutes. You got to do something for me. You can't just be, I can't only rely on you to shoot the ball. And I mean, even aside from that, you talked about Rui's physicality on the offensive end. That is so huge for this team.
Yeah.
Because the nature of this team, I mean, Ime Udoka has said it. A couple other coaches have said it. You can't let this team, meaning the Lakers, bully you because that's what they want to do. And now we're adding a guy. And look, we know D'Lo and Austin are not big physical athletic guards. So we're not going to win that, oftentimes. But you're adding a third guy in the starting lineup who's kind of built like Bron, like in terms of like the strength capacity and the size and the stockiness, different kind of offensive player skill-wise, but will be a guy who will put you in the post, try to put you in the basket, will bully you to the rim if he can, if you have the wrong matchup on him. Like, that spares AD. That spares LeBron, too. That keeps their legs fresh to not have to deal with it. Like, Bron drove so many times today into a crowded Grizzlies paint, and he was getting fouled, and they're just not calling it, but he's still finishing the plays and stuff like that. So it's just like, yeah. Rui, whatever that is that clicked for Rui, like, if it was his players telling him something or the coaches telling him something or maybe something was internal, that's huge because it fits right into the identity of what this team is. And you need that. You need that confidence. You need that identity. That's the only way we can make a run in the playoffs, regardless of our seeding.
Let me ask you this, because I think this is a very simplified version. This is not how we really discuss things. It's just I go back and forth this, Nick, because obviously everyone is trying to find the reasoning why this team is in a 4 seed or whatever, right?
Sure.
Is it as simple as if Rui started earlier, we're just a better team to you?
I think we get a couple more wins for sure. I don't know if it's a difference between us being a top 4 seed and maybe a 5 or 6 seed, but I think it's probably the difference between us being like a 6 or 7 seed versus like a 9 seed, which is where we're at right now. I think the margin's a little bit closer.
So the Pelicans are in the race for the 4 seed. They have 28 losses. We have 32. So, you know, like that's stuff that I go back and forth on. I say this just not to defend him. I don't think Rui was a deserved starter to start the year. He just wasn't playing as well. So I understood the logic of he got hurt really early. He got, I believe he broke his nose and then he had the concussion, right? Yeah. So those two things intertwined, and that really, I think, kind of got him on the back burner. And plus, I remember watching him. He just looked like a guy that didn't understand his role, didn't understand what he was supposed to do, thought he was paid to just be a bucket. It was very clear. And so that's all he was doing. Like, he wasn't defending, he wasn't weak side blocking, he wasn't rebounding. And now that's clicked in. And yeah, it's tough to ask kind of what came first. I think that's the big, because obviously Vando's injury also, right, is a very much a
big wrench. Yeah.
What does that universe take you to if Vando just does not miss the whole year? Vando played a few games, and I'm just going to chalk that up to him missing the whole year. Rui just starts, and Torian, because Torian looks like off the bench, Torian Prince looks like a fine role player, right? His usage is at the correct spot in most parts. Yep. There's still some Torian, I call them like Torian single adventures, where he just goes on his own like adventures, you know? It's like Torian Prince and Friends kind of thing, where it's like, can you move the ball, buddy?
Can I tell you what I think Torian's doing? Torian is playing exactly like a guy who is in a contract year that is going to, the first thing he does when he goes into like free agent conversations, he's going to pull out the career stat sheet and he's going to be like, look at how much I scored. Look at my shooting percentages from three. I need $10 million a year. Like, he's legit playing like a guy, because he'll be doing some stuff and I'll be like, I know, you know, that's not the right basketball play. Why are you doing this? And, you know, I mean, look, sometimes he drives into traffic and he finishes and it's like, all right, we needed that. Like in the Bucks game, I think he had a play where he caught it, pump fake to three, and then went straight to the rim for a layup in a crowded paint, and he scored. And I was just like, look, that kind of small stuff is what we need. That's, you know, ultimately the difference between us winning and losing a game. But like the Grizzlies game, he had one where he caught Bron, threw it to him in the corner, and he had the swing pass to Rui, chooses not to pass it to Rui, and then takes a three instead. I was like, all right, dude, you need to relax. All right, man. Like, I get it. I get what you're trying to do, but he's playing like he's in a contract year for sure.
I mean, Vinay, just not to debunk that, but he's in year 9. I mean, it's not like teams have a shit ton of data on Torian Prince, and it's not like Torian Prince is in a role like, oh yeah, I'm pick and roll ball handler this year, so like, you got to pay me. I'm in a different tax bracket now in terms of what you got to pay me. He's still in the same role. He's just doing it in a way that just does not make any sense. It's he's the most to me, he's the biggest like bad process, good result guy, where even the threes he made tonight, a lot of them contested, and then he kisses the crowd after. I'm like, dude, that's a terrible shot. Just, you weren't even open. You just hit a contested, the one when he was like falling down. They were so contested. He was already like falling down and he hit it in the corner. I'm like, dude, like these aren't. And then he had the behind the back pass to Jackson Hayes again, Milwaukee, where we're down 16, flashy jump behind the back. You don't even make that pass in any normal read. It's just a lot of stuff. But like, again, I hate to like just, you know, blame one player for a season. Sure. I think it's very easy to kind of put your, you know, laser. It's much easier to laser blame on one person rather than kind of having a bunch of people to kind of lose context with. But it just feels like the Rui for Taurean has kind of, it's not just about those two Vinay swapping, right? It's that sub moves everyone else into their correct rotational fix, right? Like it puts everyone in the right mode of like, he's now Jackson Hayes can be the direct sub, and now our bench units aren't for, you know, small guys, right? Now it's like you have a little bit more situation that you more rotational situations that you can kind of work with, and it feels like that move singularly kind of turned around this. I think when Rui came to be a star, we moved like 13 spots in terms of as an offensive team. We became an absolute offensive juggernaut. We are scoring at a clip that a Laker team never really has. We have almost a team full of guys shooting 40% from three. We're having our offense looks like it's starting to click. The ball is kind of moving with energy and pace in a way that just it wasn't before. So that's what I wanted to ask you, if you feel the same way about the just the Taurean for Rui. That, to be honest, as big of like us two are kind of in the end, I think Darvin's a little bit better than people think. That was probably he stayed with that too long, but it's interesting to kind of think what universe the team's in if that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I think we've been pretty consistent. A lot of people think I am a huge supporter of Darvin Ham on the timeline, apparently. Same group that doesn't already like me, but like I think there's, you know, some stuff has been piled on Ham unfairly, and I don't think Ham has had anything to do with it. But I think one thing that he does have control over is just how much he's kind of used Taurean kind of overutilized Taurean in his role. And I mean, if you've followed Lakers detail for the folks that are watching, if you follow this with any degree, you guys know exactly what our explanation is. Short explanation is he's trying to extract more utility out of a guy like Taurean Prince and Cam Reddish than they actually can provide. And it's not reasonable to expect that. And that's just, it's a coach thing. And you know, we've talked about coaches having favorites, and that's a thing for a lot of different teams. It's not exclusive to just Darvin Ham. So we don't have to rehash that. But yeah, I mean, your original question was, is that lineup change the difference if we had played it sooner? Is it the difference between us being a higher seed and lower seed? I would say, yeah. I don't know how much higher, but I would say, yeah. But the only thing I would kind of put as an asterisk to that is we don't know what was happening behind the scenes. We don't know if there was, like, Rui was having, you know, it was a health issue for Rui, if it was something else, if there was politics at play that maybe doesn't have anything to do with the coach and has more to do with the fact that in order to get Taurean Prince to come play for the Lakers, we had to promise him a certain amount of minutes, certain amount of roles. Our front office has been known to do that. It's even prior to LeBron, it's just the Laker way of doing things. We are very much in bed with, or not in bed, we are very much despite the Laker brand, our front office can be told by different agents that their player must be allowed to play a certain amount of minutes and that sort of stuff. We saw that with the Christian Wood thing a little bit earlier this year when Christian Wood kind of got benched or he thought he was going to start, and then he tried to play it off like he wasn't tweeting about the coach. But that kind of stuff happens. It's very, very normal. But Rui's had some sort of breakthrough. So, I mean, that continues to be good. What else did you take? Did you take anything else from the Grizzlies and Bucks game?
No, I think like I thought the Bucks game really showed like the resiliency, and this team is starting to feel like the playoffs are on the horizon. I think that's what we were asking for. 9 games above 500, first time since the 2021 season. 5 game win streak matches the longest from last season as well. And it's the largest of this season. Our largest win streak before this was 4, obviously, which we just won the other day, and then last season it was 5 in December. So this team hasn't really strung together wins in any type of capacity. The Houston Rockets just won 10 in a row, just to give an example of like how much the Lakers haven't been winning at that type of pace. Houston, by the way, on the Warriors' tails. really close with
you see Draymond get ejected.
Draymond get another ejection. I just
That guy is great. I mean, props to Steph. I think Steph had a really great game, and they beat that Orlando team. But boy, that guy is not making it easy for his teammates.
You see the Draymond hug at the end of Steph Curry, and another check that Draymond wrote that Steph cashed.
Steph has to cash
full cash.
Yeah. I think you follow him too. My guy Nico. Nico's a Warriors fan, and boy, he puts these voice notes, and it is so funny. Not his paid, but just like he's like a hardcore. You could tell he's like a hardcore 100%. Warriors fan, and not just like a player fan or whatever. And so it's just like I definitely empathize for that. Like I don't get it. Like I don't get it. Like I rewatched the play, and I was just like, this play, you weren't even involved in this play. Like it was an Andrew Wiggins foul. Like, and Wiggins was just like, oh, whatever. Like it's just like probably his first foul of the game. Like, why would you not have the you know, common sense to be aware of that situation? But whatever, you know, players are human. Sometimes that happens, but I think with Draymond, it's just happened way too much now, where it's just something random and he gets himself ejected. But Rogers, let me shift gears here. There was another episode of the Mind the Game pod with Bron and JJ, and it was a great episode. They've fully invested into explaining what the plays are, which even I don't know all of them. I don't even pretend to be an X's and O's guy. I always defer to somebody else, like you or somebody else on Lakers Twitter that's much more knowledgeable in explaining that sort of stuff, because I don't know the terminology. Like, I'll explain stuff like there's the down screen to the dribble handoff. Oh, people will be like, oh, that's called this play. I was like, I don't know that. I'm just describing it play by play.
Sure.
So that pod is great. It's phenomenal for all this stuff. And I think the really cool part is they're starting to take WNBA footage and insert that into their pod too as well. So I don't know if you got a chance to watch them. In the second episode, when they're talking about an out-of-bounds play, they're using WNBA footage of that play being successfully run or that coverage being run successfully. I thought that was really cool because I don't think I've seen too many people do that that aren't like dedicated WNBA. And it's great. Bron being, you know, the stature that he is, knowing how many eyeballs he has on that pod, inserting that sort of thing in there. I think that's really cool of them to do that. So that's interesting. But there's two things I like to discuss from that. And the first one is not as inflammatory, but the second one will be. The first thing was this thing that Bron talked about, specifically referencing the Clippers game. Now, I think these two episodes are filmed together. That's why he's talking about it again.
Yeah, it was a little confusing, but yeah.
Yeah. And so he talks in that game about making a halftime adjustment. And basically in that Clippers game, we were watching it. Harden and Kawhi were basically picking on whichever switch that they could get. And, you know, they would pick on Austin, or Kawhi would pick on Torian Prince or whoever it was. They basically get to dictate their matchups. Part of the reason the Lakers played so poorly in the first half defensively was because they were just getting overwhelmed. Like, the Lakers were openly switching all the assignments, and that was just causing a lot of trouble. And so I remember tweeting it during the game in the second half. In the second half, Bron made a concerted effort to not allow Kawhi to switch off. And Bron, in this episode, mentions that. He said that he vetoed what the plan was. So I was like, okay, that's an interesting way of putting it. He vetoed what the plan was, and he decided that he was just going to guard Kawhi and not allow Kawhi, because he knew that it wouldn't help the team out. And I think he says the thing where he's like, I know how Ty Lue likes to play hunting mismatches or whatever, and that's why he did that. So I thought that was really cool. And I thought JJ asked him, and we ended up winning the game because of it. Bron's defense changed, aside from his three-point shooting, Bron's defense on Kawhi is why we won that Clippers game. Like, that was 100%. A huge part of it. And JJ is a really great interviewer because he immediately asks him a question after that, which is the question that in my mind, I was like, I'd love if JJ asked him this question. And he does. JJ said, basically asks him, you know,
can you do this?
Can you do it all the time? Because that's hard to do. You know, he's basically implying that. And Bron says, you know, that his competitive spirit, he's down to do that if he has to, but he has to pick it, but he has to pick his spots. Now, Raj, the reason why I love this clip so much is not because I'm right, because me and you both said the same thing and people got mad at us. They didn't get mad at you. They got mad at me for obvious reasons. But because you and I had pointed out a while back that when Lakers play certain teams or certain matchups, there are stars. It's not just a Bron exclusive thing. It's also an AD thing. They will pace themselves in a way, offensively or defensively, to manage themselves. Because the making the playoffs healthy is really important. Because they genuinely believe that our two star genuinely believe that if they're healthy, they can win a championship. It doesn't matter what their seeding is. That's the confidence that they built from what happened last season. And so Bron kind of says that he has to pick and choose his spots. And I think that's a very fair thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But the problem I have is that when we make that observation, people get upset. That's one thing. The second thing is this. I think the team, and we've mentioned this before, I think Darvin Ham, and this is not to absolve him of everything, I think Darvin Ham and the role players have sometimes had issues or struggles reading what mode Bron or AD may be in when they are pacing themselves. Mm. And I don't think that's an unfair observation. I don't think anybody's to blame. I think that's just hard to do in basketball when you have two high usage guys the way they have. And I think a couple of pods back, I kind of mentioned that like Bron's usage is at one of it, at some of its lowest levels it has been of his career, because he's actively trying to allow D'Lo and Austin Reeves to run it. I don't think it's just to empower those guys. I think it's also because he's like, I'm 39 years old. He says it on the pod. He's like, I'm 39 years old. He makes a joke about what was it, being a 2003 Escalade, or 2003 Suburban, who's never gotten his tire changed, right?
Like, tire changed,
Yeah, like I think it makes a ton of sense that he says that. But my point is, or the thing that I'm getting to, which I'm glad he said, is that, okay, when I'm watching, when I see you not wanting to chase Harrison Barnes through screens and he's just taking wide open threes instead, is you pacing yourself? Is you saying, look, I'm not doing that tonight. This is Harrison Barnes. I'm not doing that against the Kings. Like, it's not going to make a difference. Like, I'm just not going to do it. I'm okay with that because you said that.
Right.
At least then I could turn around and say, coach, like, Ham, you've got to see that. Like, you've got to see, okay, he can't chase these guys around tonight, and you've got to adjust your personnel accordingly to allow Bron to be who he needs to be while covering. And it might not be possible. Some games just might not happen. We might have to lose the games because of that. Not because of one player, but it's the long game. But that's an important thing of basketball. It's not easy to navigate around, and it's certainly not easy if you're wearing a Laker jersey. Talk to me about that kind of explanation that he gives, or that segment from that pod.
So you're 100% right. I love that, you know, JJ followed up with that, and I love the just idea of this podcast. LeBron's a very smart guy, saw the landscape of what's going on, and tapped right in, which makes sense. Tapped right into this type of basketball conversation, but. Look, I thought it was interesting too when JJ asked him that, because he is good. I thought he, and honestly, Binay, I thought he was too politically like correct with that answer.
Yeah.
Like when JJ asked him, can you do this every night? I wanted LeBron to say, F no, what are you talking? Of course I can't do this.
Right.
What are you talking about? But instead he paused and he said, I'll try. I'm competitive, so I can try. No, of course he can't. And like that, I think that's an obvious answer for a guy who's 39 years old. He's obviously not able to, he can't stick Kawhi for 48 minutes a game. Kawhi can't stick LeBron for 48 minutes a game. Watch how the Clippers load manage their stars, right? And I think a lot of teams go through this. Now, I think the question that you put at is, like you just mentioned the example with Harrison Barnes. I'm sorry, but there is no making up for one player deciding not to guard his guy. Like, again, this is not, I'm not excusing LeBron for the behavior, and I'm not, you know, attacking him for it. I'm just saying that there's nothing you can do if you're playing 4-on-5 defensively. There's guys you can play off, and you just have to live with. LeBron mentioned, I thought it was funny because they mentioned, I don't know if you remember this part, but they mentioned Luka, how he gets blitzed, right? Yeah. And LeBron was mentioning, I don't get why we blitz Luka. I'm like, we blitz Luka every time we play the Mavs. what are we talking about? That is literally our defensive coverage against Luka, is we blitz him every single time. But LeBron's like, I don't get why we blitz Luka, and you just can't give up Hardaway threes. And last time we lost because Dante Exum hit 7 threes. I was like, that was
a 19% three-point shooter. Yeah, that's probably the right thing to do.
But that, and I wish JJ followed up. Like, then how do you guard him? Like, how are you guarding Luka Doncic if you're not blitzing him in some cases? But no, for sure. And I think that was interesting too. And I think it's obviously, like, I think anyone watching can tell that LeBron's going to take off possession here, possession there. And I don't think there's anyone ever in the game that knows more about what fuel he needs to keep his tank at to go through a playoff run, right? Like, there's just no one ever in history that's gone through as many playoff runs as LeBron has. So he, like, I don't think anyone can tell him Darvin can't go, hey, LeBron, I think you can use some of your tank tonight. You're like, you really don't know how much tank it takes to, like, get through that. So, again, I'm not sure if it's right, and we had this conversation to start the year, what's right and what's, like, what's fair are two totally different asks.
Yeah.
We probably needed LeBron to be a – like, if you want a top two seed, you probably need every single night LeBron and AD to be physical defensive behemoths while carrying the offensive load. That is just the ask of a superstar. It just is what it is. LeBron's not 25 anymore. I get that. But it's just – that's the ask of a superstar in the modern NBA. If you want to be a one or two seed, that's just kind of how – that's just the par for the course. And, again, it's not fair to ask that with LeBron. But if you want a team that's going to win at a 1-2 seed, that's kind of the ask. And I think that's some of the frustrations with Anthony Davis as well from both of us, from the fan base. Like, yeah, you like, I think both of us laud his defense, and we bring it up as many times as we get. You also have to score. You can't go 3-for-11 against Sabonis on every time. Like, it's just part of the responsibility as a superstar. But no, with LeBron, I think that was totally right. He's definitely managing, and he's going to manage. And there's games like tonight where he was always like, I do not respect Lamar Stevens as a basketball player.
Yeah.
As a basketball player. So Lamar Stevens went out and dropped 20 points and just, like, was able to get whatever he wanted. And I'm not going to guard Santi Aldama because, like, I'm not wasting my legs running out to Santi Aldama when I know we can put 140 on this team if we choose to, and we're going to win. So there's no reason for me. Like, those are the calculations I'm sure he's doing. And I hope, Vinay, these are conversations that Darvin Ham is included in, that our team is included in, that the medical staff is included. Like, I just hope these are conversations that are happening within a group rather than a singular player going out and deciding, this is not my night tonight. And everyone else is like, are you sure? Like, what are we supposed to do then? Like, what's the, this is the, you know, like, so like, that's the part that I just hope there's some mutual kind of conversations here. But LeBron definitely is managing.
That's a great scenario to pose, Raj. That's a great, it gives me a question that I wonder if I ask this question publicly and try to get Laker fans to answer it. I wonder how honest it would be and how diverse the answers would be. Do you think that LeBron and the way he is managing himself, do you think anybody in the Lakers organization, I'm not saying what you hope, I'm asking just from what you've seen, do you think everybody is on the same page when Bron decides, hey, you know what, this season alone, just this season, that when Bron decides, okay, you know what, I'm not chasing this guy tonight. I'm not doing it. We'll trade buckets. You know, like, I think I shared that stat. Like, the Lakers are really good against the best teams in the league, and they beat the crap out of all the really bad teams in the league. But, like, the middle tier teams, the Sacramento Kings, those sort of teams, we're bad. We're not good against them. We're bad against them because those are the teams that are trying to scrap a little bit more to squeeze out. Do you think people on the team know when Bron is in that mode, or he's like kind of letting? Or do you think he's let Darvin Ham know? Because I could see the answer both ways. I could see where he's told Ham, he's like, look, the tape is going to be bad some games. Like, I compiled the tape of and shared it with the timeline, not to make fun of Bron, just to explain to people, like, you guys keep feeling role players when our superstars don't play. Of all of Harrison Barnes's threes, and literally all I did was compile all the Harrison Barnes threes and let people come to their own conclusion. But my point is, we see that. You and I see that because we cut the tape. We watch it a second time. I know Darvin Ham and the assistant coaches see that. There must be something where they're like, we get it. It's okay. Sacramento plays super fast, and they just chuck a ton of threes, and they hit you with a bunch of screens. We get it. It's all right. Like, next, on to the next thing.
100%. And Darvin – and Darvin wouldn't be doing his job if he ever came out and was like, yeah, you know what? Don't think LeBron wanted to defend today. Like, that's never happening. You're just never gonna get that in a post-game, you know, post-game quote. I don't think, Vinay, there's like some huddle and LeBron goes, hey, look, guys, tonight, it's just y'all on defense. Like, I don't think that I just like.
Can you imagine?
Oh, like, God. I don't think that is. What I do think is there's like a conversation like, hey, we don't mind if this guy shoots tonight, right? Like, like if this guy beats us, we live with this, right? And I think there's a world where LeBron goes in there and goes, Harrison Barnes can beat us tonight. Like, not directly, but in terms of hey, I'm going to help on Fox's drive. I'm going to double on Sabonis. And that's why sometimes it looks ugly. Now, I think the issue with this, and my issue with this when I go rewatch these games, is that basketball is such a flow sport that, like, like it's not chess pieces, right? It's not I move, you move, I move, you move. It's not an RPG game. So, like, a lot of times, like, again, fan bases will call, why is Malik Monk wide open in the corner?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, like, one guy didn't move for 24 seconds on the game. And so, like, you see Austin flying, Austin, and then, like Austin, like, you got to close out. And, like, I'm sure if Austin got truth serum put in his shoulder, he's like,
hey, man, dude, I just made two fucking rotations, dude. What are you talking about? There's four other guys on the floor.
Right. Like, so I think we go, like, tonight, we went to this game, and we're like, Santi Aldama can have every shot he wants. And Santi Aldama's been shooting well. I feel like we don't move percentages into this either. We just go with the flow on these, and we pick one guy to like, hey, this guy is going to be a high volume shooter. And sometimes we get beat with that example with Dante Exum and other guys that, yeah, that we just kind of leave open as like our game plan of this guy can beat us. And look, if teams don't have a non-shooter on the floor, Lakers usually will beat the crap out of you because it's very easy to hide, put LeBron on those type of guys. But that's what I don't think, Renee, there's, because I just don't think you can have that conversation. What I do think sometimes what happens, though, is the team is not stupid. Like, it's very easy for the team to kind of also be like, oh, this allows me to take the guard down, right? Like, I can relax, too, right? Like, now I'm going to play this as well. And so, like, that's why sometimes, like, even in Milwaukee, the team was down 19 with 4 minutes left to go in the first quarter. It's like, yeah, the whole team kind of came out. AD came out very, you know, relaxed and in a malaise, and the whole team followed suit, and we're down 19. And obviously we weren't shooting well, but I think like that happens very often. So I think that's what, I don't think there's like, but I hope, again, I hope that this is communicated with Darvin, and I'm sure LeBron has to, and like there's only 12 players or 15 players on the NBA team, and like there should be enough communication with assistants and Phil Handy and all these dudes. And like, I'm sure, like, Darvin Ham's not stupid either. He's not gonna, hey, LeBron, go by guard Kawhi first quarter.
Yeah.
Like, that's, and the Clippers don't even do that. They don't put Kawhi on LeBron in the first quarter because they understand that this is a long game that you have to play. So, I don't know if there's, go ahead.
So, I was gonna say, I didn't care to argue that point, but I thought it was funny that he posed it that way. And he said that he's the one who vetoed the plan. He
vetoed it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not saying this to doubt him. Like, I think him vetoing it is probably him going to him and saying, look, don't switch it. I'll stay with him. I think that's what that is. And I think that is credit to Bron for saying, I'll take him the second half because he's been torching our guys in the first half. But like, when you use the word veto, it's just like, oh, okay, you're overriding the coach because the coach insisted, like the coach was fighting with you about it. Like, no, I'm pretty sure Darvin Ham would rather you guard Kawhi, but he's also trying to be mindful of Kawhi taking screens and you got to navigate through screens. They tried to screen Bron in the second half and Bron was not having it. Like, he was not allowing the screen to take him, you know, separate him from Kawhi. So again, you know, the way that it's said, I think it's always kind of interesting to hear it be said that way, because I think you know, Bron is an incredibly smart person.
LeBron goes up to Darvin. He's like, guess what, Darvin? Like, I'm sorry, I'm fighting through all these screens. Darvin's like, no.
right. It wasn't. Let me not say anything because somebody's gonna see this and be like, oh, this guy hates LeBron. I'm not gonna do it. I've already got them.
On yeah.
You, but you anyways, them. My whole point of all this is, you know, the layers of all this stuff that go on, and I think Bron just kind of indirectly acknowledging that, you know, that he is human and that he does have to pick his spots and he does have to manage himself. I think I think Laker fans who expect a lot about out of LeBron in regular season games against a team like the Grizzlies or whatever when AD's out, and then the fans who think that he shouldn't take any responsibility for it, I think there's a medium somewhere there that he's kind of admitting to that he has to do it. And I think if we approach it that way, that like, look, sometimes he's going to do it, sometimes he's not. doesn't have any impact on his legacy. It's just let's just use common sense. He's a really old dude, and he's got to do that. I think that's really important. Like, the Grizzlies game is going to be a track meet. The Pacers game we play on Friday is going to be a track meet. Like, they're going to get tired. They're going to get gassed. So it's just like him managing himself. It is a real thing. So I think that makes sense. Was there anything else you took away from that specific portion?
No, I think that was understood. This is a conversation for a different pod, but I think this is also an impact of the play-in. Like, I just wonder if the play-in didn't exist, Vinay, how would the Lakers have approached this? How would the Warriors have approached this? Does Draymond get suspended that long? You know, like, I just think there's this unintended consequence that the play-in has created, which the creation of the play-in was for teams like this who are injured to kind of be able to make that up. Not your season isn't a catastrophe. What it's really done is allowed these, you know, older teams to devalue the regular season even more, right? So, like, you're seeing these games against the Wizards, where obviously that should be a game you needed to win. It's down to the wire because the Lakers know that they have this fallback. And if you talk to AD, he said, like, yeah, we don't care what seed we're in, which is great, like, theater, right? Like, oh, yeah, they believe no matter what seed they go into, you're the freaking 9 seed. Like, that's – and if the play didn't exist, you don't even make the playoffs. So, I like that. Again, this is a conversation for a later day, but I think all that has kind of concluded here to a situation where a team believes, hey, like, not every game is must win in a territory that it absolutely should be. But LeBron's like – or AD's like, yeah, I'll sit this one out. Or LeBron's like, I'll sit out the Milwaukee game. But hey, if the play didn't exist, do they sit either of these? Like, I'm not sure. Know what I mean? They probably don't, right? You probably don't get a LeBron sitting against Milwaukee. If I'm not saying he shouldn't have, I'm just saying if the play-in didn't exist. So it's another part of this as well that I think just doesn't get taken into account of. But no, LeBron is definitely resting, and it's good to hear him say that. And the coaching conversations are interesting for sure that he has on that pod. But I didn't take Vito in a way where he was going at Ham, and that's how everyone in the world took it.
100%
see it that, you know. But I didn't take it that way. And like, I would kind of like a little bit if let's wait till T Lou's our coach for every single time T Lou needs to be a prop. But no, like, I didn't take it any wrong way. I don't think LeBron meant it in any like attacking way there.
Okay. Yeah. I'm with you. I'm glad that we kind of came to the same conclusion with that. So Raj, let's get to what everybody's the meat of most volatile portion of this. It's literally only volatile because I said something that was, I didn't think was very inflammatory, but was apparently very inflammatory. So Bron alludes to, JJ asked Bron about just kind of his relationship with Austin and just empowering the players. This comes after this portion that we just discussed, where Bron talks about picking and choosing where he's got to be defensively. JJ follows up by asking him if he has to pick and choose where he's supposed to be at offensively too as well. And JJ, astutely points out that, you know, there's been large portions of the game where the Lakers have given the ball to Austin or they've given the ball to D'Lo, where Bron will be on the floor, but those guys are really the ones that are running the offense. We saw that today with the Grizzlies. Start of the first quarter, Bron's really just trying to get his shots in transition. The pick and roll stuff is all going through Austin and D'Lo, just like it did last night, that sort of stuff. Sure. So I thought that was a great follow-up question from JJ. And, you know, Bron basically says that he's trying to do that. And then he starts going in this direction where he talks about just like empowering the guys, right? And allowing them to flourish or succeed in the situation that they're in. And he talks about Austin's game one. Austin, that was the game where Rui went completely bananas. That was the one where Bron fans told me openly, don't expect a win on game one because Bron doesn't. He like typically chills out on game one to kind of like collect data, assess. Is I think the way that they say, assess the situation. But nobody accounted for Rui going ballistic in that game. And Rui had like 30 points. And Austin closes that game out. There's a point where he hits two, three, four buckets in a row. And then we end that game. That's the I'm him game from Austin. We end that game with Bron basically playing off the wing. You know, Dylan Brooks is guarding him. And it's an Austin Anthony Davis pick and roll, and Austin's being matched up against Tyus Jones, smallest guy on the floor, the guy that you want to pick on, and you know, Jaren Jackson, who's concerned about Anthony Davis on the roll. They basically turn it to a 2-on-2 game, and Dylan Brooks was not allowing Bron to hunt mismatches. We've seen him do this before. He will fight through, elbow, whatever it takes to make sure Bron doesn't get the mismatch. So, and again, remember, contextually, Bron's foot was kind of fried. Like he went into the playoffs with a foot injury. So I understand why he kind of played off. That's just the context. I'm just prefacing it like this before I get into what I actually said. So Bron in this portion turns around and says that, you know, like he likes to play a game of chess, and he's referring to Austin and just essentially Austin, like the him allowing Austin to do what he did in game one was him playing a version of chess that would eventually pay dividends down the line, which it did, you know, I didn't have any issue with what he said, other than I wasn't sure if characterizing it as playing chess is actually what was happening. Because when we rewind that game back, Austin got hot and they kept giving him the ball because Austin got hot. I think Bron should get a ton of credit for saying, you know what? He's hot. Feed him. I think there's a lot of props that should go to Bron for recognizing that. And if you want to say he empowered him, for sure, I agree. But that wasn't the first time we saw Austin be good in the fourth quarter next to Bron and AD. Like, we had seen it in the regular season prior to that. It's just that in the playoffs, that was like the first, very first game in the playoffs. So we didn't see that. That was the first time we saw that happen. So I, you know, not maliciously, just very like honestly said, I don't know about him playing chess. This is just good basketball. This is just making the right read. This is just like, let's just put it this way, Raj. If that's Kyrie Irving instead of Austin Reeves, we would be talking about how good Kyrie Irving is as a basketball player. We're not talking about LeBron playing chess.
Interesting.
LeBron's not saying that, oh, Austin Reeves, you know, I'm playing chess with Kyrie by empowering him to go further. Like, he doesn't say that about D'Lo. When's the last time he said something like that about a guy like that? And I think it's genuine. I think Bron, openly said he loves playing with Austin. It's high IQ, all that sort of stuff. My only thing was, it's just kind of a strange way to characterize something like that. It almost takes a little bit of wind out of Austin's sails because I'm like, this guy also played really well. Like, he stepped up with you on the floor. And, you know, based on the coverage or whatever was working, like, maybe we should give him a little bit more credit than that because he had proven himself up to that point. Obviously, this was his first foray in the playoffs. My thing is, just give Austin some credit, dude. We went in Boston. We went against the Bucks. I mean, this was recorded at a complete – the episode was recorded at a completely different time. But it's just like, the kid has shown that he can play. Like, can we carve out a little bit of, hey, you know what? Maybe Austin's a good basketball player. Because a lot of people think that Austin's only good because he plays next to Bron. And there's got to be some disconnect, Raj. Because single team in the league says, we won't trade with you unless you send us Austin Reeves. But fans on our fan base are like, Austin Reeves is not really that good. So there's got to be a disconnect that I'm not seeing.
100%. So I think that was an interesting kind of framing to it of like, would he say that about, you know, Kyrie? Would he say that he's empowering Kyrie Irving? I mean, the difference there is, like, Kyrie's the number one pick, right? Like, in terms of, like, Kyrie comes in right away. And, like, let's be honest, I think we have a hard time on Twitter. We, like, sensible people can't disagree anymore. So, like, I think and I put your thing in the, like, when LeBron's reading a book and they ask him about the book and he's like, oh, I don't know. Like, he just doesn't answer a question about it. You know, and like, I think LeBron has an ability to mythologize things, like, right. Put things in mythology. And like, and I think that's his job on a podcast, kind of accentuate things and kind of storybook things. I think, but also I think both things can be true in this, but I think he can.
That's fair.
LeBron's not blowing a playoff game. Let's be freaking real here. LeBron's sacrificing a playoff.
Yeah. Can I say this? I said this to you in the chat too as well. I was just like, there are people who genuinely think that Bron would sacrifice game one if he – somebody replied to me saying – I forgot what the name of the person was who mentioned it. He said – he was basically telling me that you don't understand. Bron knew he could win that series even without Austin's performance. But he's doing it to build him up. I said, and for me, I was just like, in what? And I didn't respond to the person, but in my mind, I was just like, in what universe is Bron okay with throwing a game on purpose to empower a role player? We've seen him make passes the correct play to Danny Green in the playoffs and him brick it. Or we've seen him earlier this season, and I want to say one of the in a game against Phoenix, swing it to Cam Reddish in the corner. To do it. Bron never said at the end of those games, oh, I'm doing it because I want to empower Cam Reddish or give him more confidence. He said, that's the right play. That's my guy. He'll eventually make it when he has to. You know, like, I trust him. He's always going to make the right play. And so I thought that's just such a bizarre way to try and frame it. If people had just said, you know what, Bron trusts Reeves and he's always going to make the right play. And if it's Reeves, that's the guy that's going to make that, take that shot or make that decision with the ball, he trusts him to do it. That makes 100%. That's a great way to empower your teammates. But there's no long game. Reeves is here. He's been here. So I don't know what confidence he needs. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, you're good. So I think the point with that is I think it's clear LeBron can see, like, because even Austin talked about this right on the low post. He's like, yeah. I really, like, I was giving the ball to LeBron. I was like, it's fourth quarter time. It's winning time. It's LeBron's time to take over. I hit a few shots. Like, I was feeling good, but, I didn't expect I was going to close the game. Yeah. LeBron's like, no. I remember Austin vividly was like, LeBron was screaming, Austin, come get the ball. And Austin's like, you know that Drewski meme? Was like, who, me? Like, me? So Austin's like, me? And LeBron's like, yeah, you, like, come get the ball and win it for us. And again, like,
he did that to D'Lo, right? In what was the game that there was a game where D'Lo, I think it was against OKC or something like that, where D'Lo was like just frying everybody in his matchup.
Oh, yes.
He swings it to Bron, and Bron's like, dude, what are you doing? And he throws it back to D'Lo, and D'Lo ends up making a three or something like that. Yeah. Like, that's great empowerment for sure.
We were up like 30
Don't mention that, Rod.
I'm just saying that.
Let the mythology live, bro.
No, I'm just saying, like, that's why, but the, all seriousness, I think that's what is why it's special with Austin, right? Because, like, that it is rare. Obviously, LeBron gets credit for the humility of, like, as a superstar, being like, hey, here, Austin, go, you know, win the game. And it takes a lot for a star of LeBron's caliber to be like, it's game one of the playoffs, but you're going. So the right basketball decision, and even if I'm like wanting to empower you because I know I need you for a long, I think there's a fair way to look at that where it's, sure, hey, I'm gonna need Austin for a long playoff run. Now the idea that he would blow that game is insane. That people forget now, but we were the 7 seed playing a 2 seed who had home court, you know, like, didn't even have home court, right? And so, like, but I'm sure LeBron looked at it like, look, Austin's frying Jaren Jackson Jr. on pick and rolls. 100%. I'm on one leg, right? And I'm not getting anything going. Dylan Brooks is leaning on me every single possession. Austin, go cook the worst. I don't remember if it was Tyus or if it was Ja was guarding Austin.
It was Tyus, and then they tried to put Desmond Bane on him for one play, and then the Lakers countered by running a screen action before they ran the pick and roll to get Tyus back on Austin.
Yeah, and he was just frying the drop coverage, right, Jaren Jackson Jr., because your point, 80's role, and so Austin was going. So, again, like, the whole point of these is for it to be a little bit more of a storytell, and I think it just sounds better, obviously. And LeBron's like, I didn't trust Austin at all. I just gave him the ball, and ooh, the game happened. Like, that would not be as fun of a story as this. But I do think they have a good relationship. I don't think it's fake, and you're right.
No, 100% is real. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, again, our main offense is Austin, LeBron, AD, like, three-man kind of actions where all three of them are involved and we're moving to corners. The separation with the fans is strange. Like, it's why, again, I get propped as an Austin stan, but I try to document, like, hey, this is not normal. Like, this is not normal for an undrafted guard to now be your main ball handler, and outplaying Damian Lillard is becoming a better. And I see it every time on the timeline. People clip his 2 turnovers that he has and go, this is why Austin shouldn't have the ball. I'm like, watching the same games, he's finished with 13 assists. Yeah. He's playing 48 minutes a game.
Assists, you're going to have turnovers. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
He hasn't missed a game this year. I think he's played like 150-something straight games, which includes Team USA. Like, I just like to, again, not to prop up Austin here, but with your point about whether it's chest or not, honestly, the real answer is we'll never know, right? Like, you'll never know. No one will ever know if that's actually what it was, but it's very clear that LeBron trusts Austin a ton. We'll never find out if that was, like, actually him, you know, playing 4D chess or not. In terms of, honestly, like, I think the real answer is somewhere in the middle, where I think LeBron saw Austin, and people forget, Vinay, LeBron missed the final month of that season.
Yeah.
Right. While we're in a playoff hunt like this, even more dire, right? Way worse record when we started, like, our run. It was Austin, Dennis, Lonnie, and AD, right? AD came back, a little hobbled as well. But we had a whole new team, Vando, Rui, pushing us into the playoffs, basically. Yep. LeBron came back, I think, against Chicago. I was at that game with like a week or two left in the season. And so I'm sure LeBron watched that, and Austin had the game against Phoenix. You remember that game where he dropped like 30, I think, on national TV. He had the game against Orlando where he had like 25 at home. Like a bunch of these performances that I'm sure ticked off something where LeBron didn't just go in game one. Austin hit a few shots. He's like, hey, here's the ball. There was just like progression that I'm sure that came up to
which is the point I was trying to make. I was just like, they saw how good he was prior to that. Like Austin had some good games in fourth quarters running that action with LeBron. Like it didn't just magically appear that like game one, he just in the fourth quarter, he was just like, no, you know what? I see something that nobody else sees. And maybe I'm framing it in a way that's probably unfair to LeBron, and I probably am. So I can take responsibility for that. But it's just like, my point was just like, you can't say that that guy has got some of the highest IQ and then just act as if he didn't know what Austin was in that moment or what was going on in that moment. I think Bron is one thing that he's been really, really, and he probably doesn't get enough credit for it. It probably gets used against him, you know, because of the Kyrie shot against the Warriors, is that when he knows somebody else has it going and maybe he doesn't have it going at the same clip or doesn't see an advantage that he can create, he does defer regardless of whatever the situation is, unless there is something that he sees out of it. And I think he deserves a ton of props for that. My only hesitation was when it turns into like, oh no, I'm playing this game long. Bro, Austin's been getting mentioned in trades for like the past 6 months. Like, so we empowered him for what? Just to trade him later? Like, I think he is fully invested in Austin. I think he loves Austin. I mean, I know he loves Austin. Like I've heard him and AD really love Austin. They trust Austin. So there's no confusion about that. It was just the way he framed it. I was just like, okay, can we just give Austin a little bit of credit? Because like he had to actually make these shots. You know what I mean? Like he had to split Jaren Jackson and Tyus Jones to get a layup off in crowded coverage. You know what I mean? Like there's an actual basketball thing that has to be played to it. That's my only thing. Sometimes we kill our guys for not making shots, but we don't give them credit for when they do actually make them. And I think you pointed it out very nicely. When Austin has a couple bad turnovers, they can be ugly, and that stuff will go viral. Like Austin trying to draw fouls and looking silly while trying to draw fouls and not getting them will go viral 1,000% of the time. But not enough people share him closing games for us sometimes, you know, and it just it doesn't float. So that's my only thing. I don't have any deep-seated passive aggression for LeBron. So.
For sure. My favorite thing is like on that pod, LeBron and JJ, because it's a very, the way that the conversation is kind of framed is kind of a, we don't really like how the game is today, like the player, you know, like it's kind of framed in that light. And I just love, like, it's so funny because LeBron's still playing, right? So usually that light is given after a player is done playing. So like it's very easy to just kind of infer what he's talking about. So on the pod, LeBron's like, yeah, I hate 2-for-1 shots. I hate them. Right. I don't understand. I understand 2-for-1. I'm like, every game we take the most awful 2-for-1 shot I've ever seen. Like tonight, I think Spencer Dinwiddie took like a 2-for-1 35 seconds. Yeah. So it's just fun to kind of go in and listen to that. But it's interesting. Like some of the stuff that, like, again, some stuff I disagree with. Like I remember LeBron said, no coach ever lets me defend the pick the picker play like this. I'm like, I'm sure LeBron, if you went up and asked, like, hey, can we defend it this way this time? I'm sure there'd be a conversation where you know, that would happen. But again, the conversation's great. I think it's needed for basketball discourse. I think LeBron saw it. LeBron saw a gap in the media and took advantage of that.
As an aside, did you see the Stephen A. Smith like saying that this is like Bron's way of, did you see that clip of Stephen A. Smith, I think on his show, saying that like, this is a really clever way of Bron doing it with JJ on like this pod that they two have created. Like this is like Bron's way of like not getting involved with like First Take and ESPN, but still kind of trying to be in that realm to be able to like explain his position on things. You know what I mean? Like, he was trying to say like Bron is basically running like media cover, using the pod to run cover for himself. And even I saw it, and I was just like, well, I think it's just too far. Like, I was just like, I've watched both of those episodes. The first one I've watched twice, like, and they're just talking basketball. Like, of course, there's going to be some stuff that Bron talks about that he doesn't like, and then obviously the Austin Reeves thing or whatever. Like, it's not going to be just all X's and O's, but like, I don't know, like 90% of it, 85% of it is just like real basketball, just coverages and, you know, small nuances in the game that don't get discussed. So I thought that was bizarre of Stephen A. Smith. He might be a little butthurt that he's doing it with JJ Redick and not doing it with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen that clip, but I think it's interesting because there's a lot of player pods out right now, right? And a lot of players are trying to do this break down the game in a very smart and analytical mind. And what I noticed, because I listened to all of them as a psycho, like I go and listen to whoever drops a pod, I'm going to go listen.
Yeah, you're crazy. I can't do that, but yeah.
And so they all, Vinay, start out like this, right? So like I remember when the Arenas pod came out, and they're doing a great job, obviously. Gil's Arenas is incredible. But it started off as a like, all right, let's break down what's happening. And eventually they all succumb to becoming what they said they're out against, right? They all succumb to becoming, like, the Draymond Green show started off very much Draymond. Hey, this is why this works. This is why our offense works. Yeah. And now it's like, KD, come at me, bro. It's like
Kyrie's the score that everybody thinks KD is.
So like, it's like, those are conversations I could have got from anyone, right? Like, but the whole point of Draymond being there is his perspective on the game, so it's interesting to watch. So it's cool to see, and JJ is very good at like condensing this information to where it's digestible as well. It doesn't sound like a I don't know, like a classroom. It sounds very digestible and it's entertaining, and him and LeBron have a nice kind of back and forth with it. But a lot of the player pods start out like this, and they eventually devolve into the whatever the headline is. They start just speaking on stuff that just all these first take and why these first take shows and I forgot what Skip show is called anyway, but all those shows kind of devolve to. So hopefully this keeps up. I like it.
You see Skip shooting jump shots on the timeline? Did you see that?
What world are we in? Like, what universe do we live in?
Oh my god.
Do you think Skip tweets his tweets? Do you think that's him behind that? It's just some of the tweets, there's just no way. There's just no way.
I think he dictates his tweets to somebody. I don't think he actually tweets them. I think he probably tells. He goes and he turns over his shoulder. He's like, tweet this. And then the guy tweets it out and grammar checks it or whatever he does. But I saw footage of him shooting jumpers on the timeline. I was like, I don't know what is happening right now, why we're seeing that sort of thing happen. But yeah, bronze. Let me shout out these guys because I watched this podcast too. It's a Flagrant podcast with Andrew Schultz and Akash Singh, and they're two buddies that do it too, Alex, and I forgot the other guy's name. It's a comedy podcast, but JJ Redick was actually on that this week, and they're making the
Flagrant Pod, right?
Flagrant Pod, mm-hmm. Those guys, dudes are hilarious. So I was like listening to them. But JJ Redick was on that, and there's a small segment where JJ Redick talks about the qualities that a great basketball player has to have to be successful in the NBA. And he lists out the athletic qualities, the physical qualities. And then he also lists out the non-physical qualities. So like, it's not necessarily just IQ. So he doesn't say, oh, basketball IQ. He actually breaks it down to very specific things. And I would highly encourage, if you don't, it's a long pod. It's like 2 hours long. But if you can find that clip of JJ Redick explaining it. I'm telling you, Raj, JJ is destined for a front office position. Media is not for him. He's too smart with the way he, not the way he breaks down basketball, but the way he thinks about basketball. Like you and I talk about the difference between different kinds of processing. There's processing when you catch the basketball, there's processing when you're closing out. There's so many different types of processes that have to occur that we could list them all out and say, this guy's good at this. JJ is looking at it at that level. And he's looking, like he's saying stuff like, this is just an example. He's saying that spatial awareness, which is a great way to describe it. Spatial awareness on the court is a quality that your best basketball player has to have. And so he's essentially giving the example of Jokic. Jokic always knows where his teammates are at all times based on where he's at with the ball on the floor. Mm-hmm. The best players in the NBA, LeBron is another great example of a guy like that, always knows where his guys are going to be, even if he's not looking directly at the guy that is going to be. And that's why you get some of those great passes and stuff like that. So if you guys get a chance to listen to it, please watch that podcast. Watch the JJ Redick episode, because I thought it was a lot of comedy, but that basketball portion I thought was really, really awesome.
Last thing on that, I think JJ does a great job, and he's uniquely just talented at this. Because I think, you know, like people call, like, Rashad McCants is on the Gills Arena show, right? And people just call him all
kill that guy. Poor God.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be a heel, Raj. I have to be the bad guy. Because you can't be the bad guy. It's not your nature.
No. It's not just Rashad McCants. Also, like, Kenyon Martin's on that show, right? And some of the stuff Kenyon Martin also says, just like, you played 20 years in the league. How is that your basketball viewpoint? Some of the stuff that he says. But like, I think JJ just understands not only the game, because I think to play in the NBA, you have to have some sort of understanding. He's just able to articulate it in a way that I think like a lot of people just aren't able to. And I think that's why it works so well. So you're able to like really get in the mind of JJ. Not only knows why a play is happening, but he can also tell you like what he's thinking as that play is going. And I think that's a really interesting kind of perspective that like I wish other guys were able to do it. Like Vince Carter's on ESPN all the time, Vinay, and I don't think he's ever said a play name once. Like, it's just, you know, like, and Kendrick Perkins is on TV every single day. There's no like breakdown of what's going on. It's very much a, these guys suck or this guy's soft or, you know, and stuff like that. So I think it's cool where the, and JJ obviously ruffles feathers on every show he goes to, because he's like, what the hell are y'all talking about in here?
You know what? Because there's like a line in the sand that he'll draw when it comes to basketball stuff. He's like, okay, like we can joke around and do the hot take stuff, but there's like at a point where like, okay, like let's not disrespect the game now for the sake of entertainment. Mm-hmm. And I think there are probably a lot of players that are like that. But those media checks are crazy, Raj. That money comes in, it's hard not to keep rolling in that direction. So. Any last thoughts, Raj? Any last takes before
I think that's it, man. We got like 10 games left. Season's flying by. 10 games left. Playing game coming up. So looks like playing game coming up, unless Denver rested their star tonight, Jamal Murray. So Phoenix gets a free win off of them.
Yeah.
But hopefully we catch them and get into the playoffs. But this was a fun week for the Lakers. 5-game win streak. It's nice. Yep. Seems like the team's playing well. We're in a good rhythm. So.
Yeah.
So Lakers, keep it up.
Yeah, Lakers got a date with next game with the Indiana Tyrese Halliburtons. And so we play them on Friday. Another game that's going to be a track meet. And you know, we got to make sure that we take care of those kind of games so that we can try and take advantage of this tiebreaker that we have over the Suns. And if should we end up tying them in the standings. But season is winding down. There's still basketball to be played, there's still positioning in the play-in and the first seed, second seed, whatever it is, that's still going on. And, you know, we keep our fingers crossed that our guys stay healthy and the Lakers continue to keep rolling. But the offense is rolling, Raj. The defense hopefully will catch up, but the offense is rolling. The Lakers can hopefully add to this 5-game win streak. So for the folks that were with us, all 1,600 of you that were with us here live tonight, we appreciate you. Like, share, subscribe, whatever it is. We appreciate you tuning in, and you guys can always play this back if you ended up joining us later. And you know, hopefully Lakers keep it rolling. And if nothing else, we'll see you in the next one. Take it easy.